I knew that there was paranormal and spirits because I'd had experiences as a kid, but I didn't believe there was angels. Yeah. Now I know there are.
You know there are now.
I know there are. Yeah. The things I've seen since I died, I'll tell you.
You're gonna have an interesting time convincing me, but I'll try to have an open mind here.
What's really cool is ever since it happened, I have a special way of understanding how to heal certain things. And it's not that I do it. I just help kind of unwrap something on somebody energetically and help them wrap it back the right way.
And that's interesting.
And they heal. Yeah. And it's ever since that happened. Like all sorts of things.
That sounds really interesting. Yeah. Tell me about what happened to you. How old were you when this happened?
So I was 25 years old. It was in 2003. And I ended up aspirating. Yeah.
Aspirating means what?
I ended up suffocating on my own vomit after I passed out.
And what were you doing to make yourself vomit?
So I had taken a supplement, and this supplement was from overseas. Me and my buddy, we had both taken it, and both felt sick right away. What we didn't know is this supplement.
Hold on. What kind of supplement were you taking?
It was called Fernone Dehydro. It's illegal now, but it wasn't back then.
And this is for what purpose?
And it was for muscle recovery. So it was like a muscle recovery accelerator.
You're into?
Bodybuilding.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, so we ordered this stuff from Thailand, and I had lived in Thailand previously, so I thought, you know, oh, that's good enough. So we ordered some from Thailand. It was sold out all over the United States. This stuff came. It was all written in Thai script, which I didn't know how to read. I did not know how to read Thai script. So we get this bottle. We think, huh, it smells just like the American stuff. Let's take our normal bottle cap. It's just a liquid supplement. We take our normal bottle cap, and right away, like, chills and coldness start spreading over our chest, both of us, even into our legs. And I knew we were in trouble. We need to go eat. That's what I thought. We need to go eat. So, you know, as an invincible 25-year-old, instead of going to the hospital, I went straight to a Dairy Queen to get some food. And it was the closest restaurant to where we were living. And so we went down to this Dairy Queen, and I barely stumbled in, made it into the bathroom, and locked the door. And my buddy, he collapsed on the first booth as soon as you walk in. Well, he started vomiting. The manager saw him and called 911, got him hauled away in an ambulance, and he ended up being just fine. But for me, nobody knew I was in that bathroom, and they found me about an hour after that. They opened the door and saw a dead guy on the ground. That was me. And from my perspective, I went from feeling nauseous and feeling dizzy and feeling the world like spinning on me. And all of a sudden it was like, bam. And it was dark, completely dark. I felt like I was floating. And then I could see like this far off light and scene starting to like come in and come to focus to me. And as I looked, I could see that my buddy, he was on this booth, and I saw that they were like taking him out of the booth, and they were putting him on a medical gurney and taking him away in an ambulance. And I even wanted to go with him because I knew it was him.
You saw this vision, but you were in the bathroom.
But I was in the bathroom, so supposedly, right? And so I'm watching him pull away. I tried to follow, and I could only get so far. And then I was like pulled back to this restaurant, and I was just watching what was going on. I did see that there was a dead person in the bathroom, but I did not think it was me. And this is hard for us to understand, but I was up here watching from below. I didn't understand how or why, but I was up watching down below. I was watching from above, watching all of this down below. And to me, there was no explanation, but I accepted it. I didn't reject it, I just accepted it. And I look down and I see this body on the ground. It's wearing clothes like me, but it's not me because me's up here watching. And, you know, I try to explain it. It's like pulling up to a car that looks the same as you, and the person driving it looks the same as you, but you know it's not your car because yours is right here, like you're in your car. And that's the only way I can explain it. I just was thinking, man, there's a dead guy. And I didn't recognize it was me. When they found the body, they had opened the door. A customer had complained that the bathroom had been locked for like an hour. So the manager opens the door to the bathroom. They find the body. While they're on the phone with 911, they said that the body felt cold to the touch. And so the operator at 911 said, don't touch the body, secure it for medical teams to come and assess it. So they did. They went ahead and just didn't let anybody touch it until the medics got there. And the medics who showed up, it was a two-man veteran team with a rookie who was sitting in the jumper seat in the back. And that rookie is who saved my life. Or at least he was the one who took the actions to save my life. Because he was brand new, just off of orientation or when you're just doing a ride-along to shadow veterans, that's what he was doing. He was watching all this play out. He watched the medics try to resuscitate the body. He watched them do chest compressions. He watched them try to get oxygen into the lungs. None of it worked. So they did pronounce the body dead. They put it in a body bag, and they put it in the back of the ambulance, and they tasked this rookie with babysitting the dead body while they went and got paperwork signed out. So they got witness reports and that kind of thing from witnesses in the restaurant, including the manager. And
you were watching this as well?
And I'm watching it all. Still have no idea it's me.
The body bag is closed?
Body bag's closed, yeah. But I saw the face, but the face didn't look like me. The neck had gotten so swollen in the choking or the suffocating, it had gotten so swollen. It looked like the jaw and the neck were the same width. So I was like, that's weird. You know, it's just, and the color of the skin was purple and yellow. It didn't look, didn't even look human, really. Like something living doesn't look like that. And I was witnessing all of this. I was also witnessing something odd. I could hear the voices of anyone in the vicinity, but they weren't speaking. I could hear their thoughts. So any thought that anyone was having, I was hearing it audibly out loud. And I'm thinking, like, that is so weird. Why is this? Why am I hearing everyone's thoughts? But what I could hear is this rookie medic. I could hear him berating himself. Why don't you speak up? You could be working on this body while they're doing all that. Why don't you speak up? And he didn't. He waited until the other medics came back. They had paperwork signed. They left the scene. And as they left the scene, I saw on this rookie sitting in the back of the ambulance, light start to glow from inside of him. It was not a light like a flashlight shining on him. It looked like light coming out of him. And when that happened, I heard a really loud voice from over my shoulder really fast go, this one's not dead. And it was just plain, matter of fact. And I knew he heard it because he was sitting there just like sitting in the back of the ambulance like this. And when that came through, he like froze. So I knew he heard it. Plus he was glowing. And then I heard his mind say, that's just your imagination. And so he went back into a relaxed pose, sitting there riding along. He got about another half block, and then that light got bigger, and it got to a point where he was glowing from the waist till above his head. And the second time that voice came, but it came even louder, and it said, this one's not dead. And as soon as he heard that, he had to do something. He knew it was not his imagination, so he broke protocol number one, which as a medic, a brand new medic, by the way, you can get fired for. He broke protocol. He unzipped the body bag. He started feeling around for a pulse. He made all the way down to the inside of the femur. He had to undo all these straps just to get down there. And when he did, he felt something. He didn't know what it was, but he felt something. And to him, that was enough of a sign for him to begin resuscitation. He hooked up a defib. He got oxygen forced into the lungs. And through that process, the first round of shocks, there was nothing. Second round of shocks, there was a single heartbeat. And then the third round of shocks, it was a steady but faint heartbeat. And at that point, the other veteran medics who were just laying into him while he was doing all this, by the way, they stopped chewing him out and they radioed ahead to a hospital. And one of the miracles to me is that the heart started literally a half block away from a hospital. They weren't taking the body to that hospital, but the route that they were going was taking them right past this hospital. And it was a brand new hospital. There was very little patients in that hospital, so there was a lot of people waiting around to do stuff, and they were ready. That with that short, quick call, they had a team there, and they were able to begin working on the body. But I still didn't know it was me. It wasn't until they transferred the body from the medical gurney onto the hospital bed. The body went into some bad seizures, and they were strapping down the arms of the body and the legs. And when they strapped the left arm, I felt someone where I was strapping my left arm down. And I thought that was the weirdest sensation. Why are they strapping that body and I'm feeling it? Because I looked down to see my arm, and I looked down to see the arm of the body. And then it hit me that everything that I've been watching was my own death. And how could I be such an idiot to not know that what I've been watching was my own death? And that's when this fear just swallowed me. And I felt like I was back in this darkness and it was smothering me. And before you know it, I'm seeing every little bad thing that I ever did in my life. And even when I was young, like little child bad thing, like something you don't think's that bad, a toddler, somebody really small, I saw everything I did. And I saw it from my eyes, and I saw it from the eyes of those who I did it to. And then I saw times where I didn't know I was doing something bad, and I was having a bad effect on someone. And I got through all of this, and I had the thought, if this is all that I am, why do I even exist? And that's when this wave, just wave of love and warmth and light came over me. And it came directionally from behind me. I could feel it just swallowing me up with warmth. And then I started to see every good thing I ever did, every good thing. From the littlest things to big things I did to serving others in tremendous ways and even ways I didn't know I served others. And I had this understanding that now I have a full understanding of who I was to that point. Not just the bad, I saw the good too. And I felt this overwhelming love come over me. And, you know, I was raised in a not the best upbringing, had quite a bit of abuse, quite a bit of just really hardship, especially with my dad. And I had a lot of cracks, damage, energetic damage on my soul. This love started to stitch all that up. And I could feel it just bringing me back into being whole. And as that happened, I wanted to see where it was coming from because I knew it was coming from behind me. So I turned my consciousness, I turned it around. And right there, I see this man all dressed in white. He's got like this white suit and white robes over it. And he's got a long white beard, very, very pink skin. And he's got these eyes, they feel like they can pierce your soul. They can reach in your soul and hold you and know who you really are. And I looked at him and thought, this is God. This has to be God. And just with that thought, he responded, not using his mouth, but just his thoughts. He said, no, son, I'm not God. And growing up Christian, I didn't know of any other options or maybe I didn't know what to say, but my default was, well, are you Jesus? Even though in most Christianities, Jesus and God are the same being in most of Christianity, I asked, are you Jesus? And he just loved me and looked at me and said, no, son, I'm not Jesus. I'm your guide. I'm here for you. I'm here to help you go wherever you want to go. And I thought about it for a moment, and I didn't know where I wanted to go. And so I put it to him, where is this love coming from? That love that he was just, I could feel it was him pouring it all over me. Where is that love coming from? And he said, that's coming from your home. And he said, that's coming from our home. And I can take you there. And I looked back at my body. I saw it on the gurney. It was not a beautiful scene. It was looked terrible. There was someone jabbing a needle into like the chest of the body. And it looked just horrible. I knew I didn't want that. That looked very painful. I didn't want that. And this love was so beautiful. I knew that's what I wanted. So I told him, let's go home. Let's do this. And he told me his name, is Drake. And we began this journey. And the journey he helped me understand was not just a place, like a distance from point A to point B, but it was a dimension thing where we had to go from this dimension to a higher dimension. So we were going to be traveling dimensions or space and dimensions. I don't, you know, especially at the time, I didn't quite understand physics very well, but I did understand what he was saying, that we were going to be doing some type of getting through things to get to home. And so we began this journey. And, you know, I looked at him and I said, Drake, I know it's going to be all about love. I know that's what it's all going to be about. And he says, you're right in a way, but the first thing I have to teach you is authenticity. And I thought for a second, I'm authentic. And his responses were always the same. I love that you think you are. I love that you think you're authentic. And he showed me how I had different faces that I was showing every different social group, family member. I had a different face I wore for everything. And he showed me that if I'm truly authentic, I want to take all those faces, all those masks, combine them to one, and then remove the mask. And then I know who I really am. So that's where my journey started, is it started right there with figuring out who I really was. And it's almost like I had to rewind time back to who I was when I was about 5 or 6, like long before a lot of the major trauma had happened. There'd been some trauma, but not major. And I could see that I had become different people for different people. And it wasn't like a self-esteem thing. It was a protection thing, especially because of the abuse. I would want to become who people needed me to become or who I thought they needed me to become. And so I began this process, taking off my masks, figuring out who I really was. And it was this little abused boy, about 5 years old. That's who I really was inside. And I based a lot of my decisions, a lot of my choices. I used to get in all sorts of fist fights and bar fights. And that was just the 5-year-old in me trying to figure things out. So I began to move. I could feel actual movement with Drake. And through that process, he helped me understand why we even come to this planet, why we come to Earth. And he said, Earth is a place to celebrate and to learn. It's not what we think it is. I did tell him that I thought the earth was a test. We come here to pass or fail. And if we fail, we go to hell. If we pass, we go to heaven. And again, he said, I love that you think that, but that's not totally what it is. And he expressed it was much more of a school or a classroom and not a courtroom. And that was a big, big shift for me. I could feel a substantial momentum changing as I embraced that. Because somewhere in my soul, in the deepest part of my soul, I already knew that, but I needed this reminder. And that's when he did say, it is about love, though, that we have to learn how to authentically love ourselves so that we can authentically love others. Because if we can't authentically love ourselves, we can't authentically love others. So it's really important for us while we're here to learn how to authentically love ourselves and then others. And so that was a big step for me.
How long were you out of your, how long were you watching this whole
so I was process? I was brain dead for 3 days. So I was found dead, pronounced dead, January 18th, and my wake up was January 21st. So 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you woke up in a hospital or?
In the hospital.
So they weren't totally giving up on you?
No, they had given my dad and my brother some information on palliative care, which is like aftercare for someone who's in a coma. And they were suggesting that they take me off life support. And I was on full life support still. I was on breathing assist. I was on almost all systems assist. Yeah, but that's when I did get through my experience, I woke up. I pulled everything off and I wanted to go home.
And when you were in this state, there was no panic about anything, no bills you hadn't paid or anything like that?
No. When I woke up, I couldn't remember my experience right away. It took me one day. I went to express to someone that I didn't have an experience. And that's when I realized that there was a big experience there. And it was just flooding me with tears. And me being a big guy, a bodybuilder, wannabe bodybuilder, I wasn't a guy who went around crying anywhere. And every time I even thought about the experience, I would just weep. And that opened the toughest chapter of my life. Because after that experience, I got to look behind the curtain. I got to see where we really come from. I got to see who we really are, and I wanted to go back so bad, so bad. Even to the point where I went and searched the most dangerous jobs at the time. I went and searched, back then we didn't have Google, not necessarily yet. I used a thing called Ask Jeeves. For the older folks, they'll remember that one. I went to Ask Jeeves, what jobs can you not get life insurance for? And one was underwater welder. One was a crab fisherman. And I knew that I couldn't get the underwater welder. I checked. You had to be all sorts of training. But I did sign up to do like this little exhibition to see if I can pass a physical test for crab fishing. And I also did put in for the military, actually. So I did all of that all at once.
This was after you?
After I had the experience. I just wanted to go back. At whatever cost, I wanted to go back. And so that's where that toughest chapter begins.
When you were there, you wanted to be alive. And when you were alive, you wanted to be back.
Yes, yes. I just wanted to be back. Well, when I was there, I didn't want to come back. I was forced back.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was in that space I call home, it was the power of prayer from my brother that forced me back into my body. At some level, I had to agree to it. At some level, between my physical self and my soul, the top part of my soul, somewhere up there, I had to agree with it. Because everything is our choice. It is. But in my human, I didn't want to come back. No way. I wanted to stay there.
Were you a religious person before this?
Somewhat. I had taken a hiatus from religion for about four, almost 5 years. And I knew that there was some truth there. I just couldn't comply. I was young, had my wild oats that I wanted to sow. And that I had just started cleaning up. I had just a few months earlier had quit smoking. I had quit drinking. I had started to clean up my life. And even started going back to church. And that's when this all happened, actually. It was right after only about 6 months after I started coming back. But that's, you know, that chapter after I was back, I knew that if I killed myself, that whatever I was running from, I would still have to pay that price. There was something in me that I knew that. So I couldn't kill myself, but I thought for sure I could get one of these dangerous jobs. And with that dangerous job, I'm back. I'm back home. And in the midst of that, I was hearing and speaking to spirit. And I had never, not like that. I had never heard and spoken to spirit, not like that. I had intuition, which is normal for most of us. We have like gut instinct. We have things we know that we don't know why we know. That would be intuition. I had that before my experience, but after, it was loud. And when I would do something I shouldn't, I would hear it. Like, you probably shouldn't be doing that. You know that, right? And I would respond. And I started interacting with spirit since then. And I still do to this day. But one of the greatest blessings of all this is my guide, Drake. He told me, Vinny, this is going to be really hard, but it's going to be worth it. And he said that to me as he was hugging me. And that was right before I was sent back. And he was still working with me. I could see him almost every day. I could hear him. He would just try to help me feel good about things, even though things were really rough for me. And on one tough weekend, I said, that was it. I had an altercation. I had my car stolen that weekend. I had just a lot of things all happen at one time. And I thought, this is it. I'm done. I'm done. And that's when Drake said, Vinny, you've got this. It's going to be worth it. And it was 2 weeks after that I met my wife, Andrea. I met her, and it was like the right hand meeting the left. From the second we met each other, we knew we were meant for each other, even though she didn't look like anything I'd ever dated. I didn't look like anything she ever dated. She was 19, I was 25, but it didn't matter. We knew that we were going to get married. Before we even went on one date, we knew we were going to get married. And that began to open a new chapter in my life, a chapter that was inspiring me to step forward and to start taking my experience and serve others because of it, instead of wallow in my own grief and wallow in my own pain. I now saw this literal gift from heaven, which is Andrea, and still is to this day. She was my earth angel to give me reason to stay and give me reason to want to build a life here in Earth School and serve others. And that's where we began. We began before we even went on one date. We knew we were going to get married. And we met in April, got married in August. It was a tremendous gift. But what's neat is 1 month before we got married, Andrea forced me to go to a family reunion in Wyoming, of all places. This little tiny town in Wyoming. People call it the Elkhorn Arch Town because it's got these Elkhorn arches. And it's called Afton, Wyoming, Star Valley, Wyoming. And we went to this little town, went to the family reunion. It was a normal family reunion. We got done. Everyone said they're going over to the high school to watch a little historical presentation. And I was not about that kind of stuff. But Andrea said, let's go. We're going. And I said, okay. I was kind of voluntold to go. And we went. And in the middle of that presentation, up came a picture of Drake. And it shook me. I had doctors telling me I was hallucinating. I had doctors telling me that my brain was making up things because it was starved of oxygen. And all of a sudden, here's the guy. And it's in this little town of Wyoming, and this huge screen has a picture of Drake. But it didn't say his name was Drake. It said his name was Charles. But I recognized the last name. It was my grandmother's maiden name. So I froze. Andrea knew something was up. She looked over at me. She looked at the picture. She looked at me. And she goes, that's your guide. I know that's your guide. And so we got in the car. We drove straight to my grandmother's house, which is only about a couple miles away, if that. I come like lumbering into the house. And I'm like, Grandma, 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 tell me about Charles Kazare. And her response was, oh, you mean great-grandpa Drake? He's kind of famous in our family. And that just, ooh, that blew my mind. Because now my experience went from, I'm a skeptic, always was. I wouldn't believe stuff till I saw it. And I had all this going on in this head. And now I had like verifiable proof of someone I'd never known. I never knew their name. And here's the coolest part. He would only be known as Drake, which was his middle name, by family, with work, with even religion stuff, because he had worked in religion. He had worked in government. He had worked in as a surveyor in the state of Wyoming. I mean, he had worked all these things, and he was always known as Charles. But he went by Drake to family and friends that were as good as family. So here I had this confirmation that what I had experienced was real. Or at least I was supposed to think it was real. And that changed me. That changed the way I believed. That changed everything. And you know, I've taken that from that point forward. And I've learned that you don't have to believe what everyone says, but when someone believes they believe, you can tell. And for me, I do. I believe what I saw was real. I don't understand it. I've had neurologists try to explain it to me. I've had doctors try to explain it to me. But I've also had neurologists tell me that these do happen. I got to speak with Dr. Raymond Moody and talk to him for a little bit this last year, and I expressed my gratitude. He really made public one of the first books on near-death experiences, and it helped me understand that I wasn't the only one. And here was a doctor from medical science saying these things do happen. We can't explain everything. And it did allow me this integration process. And, you know, it's been quite a few years from my experience. So I died January 18th. I woke up January 21st, and that was 2003. So it's 23 years exactly right now and a few months. But in those 23 years, I know for a fact that when I do my life review again, I'm going to be very happy with the good stuff. There's still going to be more bad stuff. I'm not perfect at all, not even close. But there's going to be a whole lot more good stuff. And I found that I, as a human being, as a soul, having this human experience, I thrive when I can help others in whatever way I can. And that's where I find my deepest and best happiness, is when I can, number one, help my family, my wife, my kids, or help others. And I've learned that when you can help someone outside yourself, you're giving yourself access to a joy that you can't have without helping others. And like with what you do, you help people tell their story. And I can't imagine how many people have been going down the wrong path. They watch one of your videos, one of your films, and they see their life lining up with that person's life, and that gets them right back on track, or at least gets some alignment to put them on a different track.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories like that.
Yeah,
from people that watch.
And with my experience, I feel that that's why it was given to me, is to do that, is to help people realign. I've done a lot of interviews all over, so many podcasts. I've had people with their phone turned off on their bed turn on and start playing one of the interviews. I had a gentleman that had written his suicide note, loaded his revolver, and then had intuition tell him, you're driving that big truck, go fill it up with gas because you know your wife hates filling up the gas tanks. So he went to the gas station, he fills up the gas tanks, and while he's there, there's this ugly little book, or beautiful little book, sitting on top of the gas pump. It was all ragged. You could tell it had probably gotten put under a wheel or something, driven over, but it was sitting up there, and it said, "The Light After Death." And here he was, thinking this was his death day, the death day he chose. So he had this idea. Well, you know what? Well, I'm pumping gas. I'll read a few pages. And, you know, some of those old Chevys, they got a lot of gas. They can hold a lot of gas. So he was there for a bit. He was about five pages in when he realized that the gas had stopped pumping a little while ago. And he also realized that he was about to do the wrong thing. So he raced home to get that note so that his wife didn't see it. And he raced home to write a new note, sharing with her what he had planned, but how God had like stepped in to stop it. And I believe that in life, we can be all consuming or we can be all creating. The choice is ours. The choice is ours. And to me, that's one of the best things I've learned from my experience, is go create, go serve, love, help. Those who deserve it or don't, doesn't matter. Do it. And you feel different afterwards. You feel happier. This universe has one of the weirdest laws. Whatever you're missing, go give that to someone else, and you walk away having it. It doesn't make sense, but it works. And I know for a fact it works. I've been living it now for 23 years and still trying to perfect it as I go.
What would you say are some of the biggest things that are different from before this event and then after?
Well, in the middle of my event, I learned that prejudice is a gate. It's a gate that keeps us out of our home. And I didn't think I had prejudice. And, you know, we all have some sort of prejudice to some extent while we're here. when we're in our human, when we're in our flesh, we're all going to carry some kind of prejudice. But I didn't think I had any. I was in a biracial home. I thought for sure there was no prejudice in me. And Drake helped me understand. He said, I love that you don't think you have prejudice in you, but how about prejudiced people? And oh man, I was like, I'll tell you about prejudiced people. I'll give them a knuckle sandwich, you know, in my old way. And he said, well, Vinny, that makes you prejudiced. And that was a big eye-opener for me. That one I think about all the time. Anytime I think something negative towards someone else, I can feel Drake telling me, go ahead and point the finger because three fingers are pointing right back at you. Like there's no way to have prejudice towards anything outside of us that does not affect us. And, you know, I worked with an amazing woman for a couple years named Della Reese, and she would say, Vinny, not forgiven is like drinking poison and hoping someone else dies. And that has been a big part of my integration since my experience, is forgiving wherever I need to, asking for forgiveness where I can, where I need to, but being willing and loving to give forgiveness to anything or anyone at all times. Because we're only here for so long. We get to play in the sandbox of Earth for only so many years. And, you know, life is ever changing. Earth is ever changing. We need to not waste our time and start learning and allowing ourselves to give, to create, and to have fun here. How we can.
How do you spend your time now? Are you working?
I do. So primarily I work with people from all over the world. I do transformational assistance. So I assist people in transforming the way they live, the way they think, the way they exist. Transform someone from being a hourly worker into being a motivational speaker, or transform someone from being a constant victim to being a teacher and healer, or also a motivational speaker. So it's like, I love helping people take who they are and in the lane that they're existing and help them make that lane either better or switch lanes. That I thrive in that. And I do it all over the world with people everywhere. Yeah.
Under the umbrella of religion or?
No, I don't. I do it under a nonprofit that I am co-founder of. It's called Living God's Light, primarily through there. And then I also do a lot of like one-on-ones. I do speaking. I do all sorts of motivational stuff. So I'm a guy who likes to stay busy. But at the same time, I'm always making time to spend time with deer. I love these deer that I live with. Like I have where I live in Georgia, there's just deer everywhere. And they come visit me 3-4 times a day. And spending time with my kids and working with my angel, with Andrea.
What would you say, Vinny, if someone had an experience similar to yours and were kind of confused as to what to do, what journey to take, to where to go?
Number one, I would highly recommend you write it down. You record it. Get it down recorded somewhere. Start there and get used to sharing it when you're feeling prompted to. I don't feel that my experience is supposed to be shared with everybody, but I do feel it's finding the right people at the right time. And I'm part of an amazing organization, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And it's an organization that represents the scientific field, the medical field that studies these experiences, as well as the experiencers themselves. And if you can do anything, get your behind to an IANS conference. It's IANDS, so International Association of Near-Death Studies. Get there. They have a conference every year. This year it's in Seattle, and I feel that's a home away from home. It's a family reunion that I love. I can't wait to go to every year. And every time they ask me, are you coming again next year? I always have the same answer. Try to keep me from coming. It's a place where you can share these experiences, whether you've never shared it with someone or you've shared it with a million people, doesn't matter. Come and share your experience there. Come and see what others have experienced. And you realize that there are a lot of transformed people on this earth from spiritual experiences, from death experiences, from out-of-body experiences, even meditative experiences. So there's just a really neat group or gathering at the International Association of Near-Death Studies, yeah.
Hmm. What do you think most people are getting wrong about the way they live their lives?
They think that their happiness is something outside of them, but what they have no idea is if you're not happy now, it's because you're not looking for the happiness that's already there. You have to find that first before anything outside you is going to make you happy. Like I've had people where they say, you know, once I earn $10 million a year, then I'm going to be happy. Then a year later, they're telling me the same thing, but now they're saying $15 million. Now they're saying $20 million. And it doesn't work. You can't give yourself happiness outside yourself. Happiness happens here, inside. And it's a choice first. And you have to start with what you got. So if you've got a rough situation, rough life, rough environment, think about the five things you would miss if they were gone tomorrow. Start with that little list. That's your gratitude list. And then expand. Add to it every day. Look at it multiple times a day. And start changing your vibration as a being from negative to positive. And when you shift to positive, positive things happen around you. If you take a tuning fork into a factory of crystal and you have it oscillating or vibrating, it will affect every crystal that you walk by, every crystal. And that's us. We're carbon. We're made of carbon. These bodies are carbon. So that means frequency affects us. And we're constantly onslaught by electronics, by all sorts of technology that are serving to lower our vibration. And then we wake up every morning, we're like, why am I so depressed? Why am I so depressed? Because we're not doing anything to raise the vibration. And it starts with gratitude. Figure out, if you can get one thing on your list that you'd be so upset if you didn't have it anymore, that's enough. And if you can't create even one thing on your list, think harder. Everybody's got one thing on their list that they appreciate, that they would be upset if they didn't have it any longer. And to me, one of the most powerful things we own is our breath. And in some religions, some of the earliest names of God were breath. The breath of consciousness is one of the first names for God. Not in English, but in their language. But the breath of consciousness means that as we lose our breath, as we shallow breathe, we shallow conscious. We go into shallow consciousness. Most average humans on earth who are stressed, depressed, and don't want to be here, they're shallow breathers and they don't take very many deep breaths. But what's really interesting is you look at someone who breathes deep all the time, and that person is feeling happy all the time, feeling positive most of the time, and getting things done, vibrating at a happy vibration or happy frequency, and getting all sorts of amazing things happening around them. So we can affect our own vibration. What the mind sees, the body conceives. So like what we allow our mind to see, our body will eventually follow suit. That's really powerful, for good and for bad. That's very powerful. Control what you're looking at and control how you live. Very simple. A lot of people that I work with, they say, you know, this is a crazy bad world, this is an evil world. And I go, yes, it is. There's evil in this world. There's also a lot of good. There's no PR campaign or news agency out there searching for it, though. So you got to go find it. You be the PR campaign for good. Go out there, aggressively find it, like what you're doing. The lessons, the little golden-laced lessons in life everywhere. It's amazing. You can change not just your life, but change the lives of everyone around you. Because like that tuning fork, change your vibration, you change the vibration of everything around you. So start here. Breathe. Do breath work. If you don't know what breath work is, super simple. Breathe in deep, hold it for a second, and then controlled exhale. Breathe in deep, hold it for a second, controlled exhale. Do that 3 times, and you can lower your cortisol, which is the stress hormone in your body. Simple. Breath. With our breath, we can change. And if we can change our breath, we can change anything.
Do you think a person needs to be a believer in God in order to make these changes?
I work with atheists. I work with agnostics. I work with religions, every religion I work with. So to me, happiness is a choice no matter what you believe. So I feel that me personally, my highest happiness is to believe in a God or a creator. But I also know it's not some long white bearded man, even though that's what Drake looked like. I know for a fact that our creator is very much like one of the first words for creator, which is the very breath of consciousness. I go around in my day to day, I see the creator in the eyes of strangers. I see it in this one mother on my way here, flying from Atlanta to LA. She had 2 babies, 3 suitcases, all by herself, and was not asking for help from anyone. And I could see like the optimism and the energy of the creator in her expressions and the way she was just taking this on, like excited to do so, grateful to do so. And I could, for some reason I could tell that she had wanted her baby so bad. She wanted to do whatever she needed to do to experience the full experience of being a mom. And to me, that's where I find the creator is in the little things, the handshakes, the glimmers of an eye, the smiles, the laughter. Oh my gosh, like children's laughter. It's very powerful to help you connect to source or creator. Even if you don't believe in it, think of the universe then. Think of it as connecting to the universe. I know that our creator doesn't care what you call our creator, even if you want to call it the universe or whatever. But there is a system of love, a system of granting power to gratitude people. And I feel that is a system to try to help us become better. A system of some type of force or source that wants us to remember who we are so that we can go back home one day when it's the right day. And not because we slipped off of a crab fishing boat.
Are you looking forward to that day, or are you?
Oh, I'm looking forward to that day. Everybody knows me, knows I am. I joke around if I hit turbulence in an airplane. I'm like, here we go, guys.
So you're not afraid of it?
No, not at all. I'm excited when it comes. Definitely, yeah. I'm not going to invite it, but I am going to embrace it when it comes completely. And a lot of the work I do ends up helping me get people ready to go. I'm not a doula, a death doula, but I've worked with quite a few people that they find me or they find my story right before they're going. And somehow we're able to meet and align and work together a little bit, help them get ready. And, you know, I've seen many go, and I feel a little envious when, as soon as they go. But then I do remember I've got my gratitude list. I'm so grateful for what I have. And I'm grateful for my breath. That's what I start with every day. Grateful with my breath. And I breathe in gratitude every morning, every night. That's what I do in my, what I call my hour of power. As soon as I wake up and before I go to bed. 30 minutes and 30 minutes. You can really amplify who you are and how you are by choosing what goes in that space in your hour of power.
Such an interesting story.
Yeah.
Vinny, thank you so much for sharing your near-death experience.
Thanks for having me.
And I wish you lots of luck in the future. You're doing great work.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.